Okay, Elena, please go ahead and show your screen. Hello, everybody. Elena's here with her webinar, and she'll start with her meditation.
Can you see it on the screen?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, I want to welcome everybody first. What number webinar we are in? 20th?
Yes,
BL?
yes, yes.
20th webinar, yes. And as usual, we start with short alignment, and you see also I'm putting the meditation on the screen. So please quieten the lower fields. Focus the attention in the head. And imagine the light of the soul pouring through the mental body and integrating the personality as the highest aspect of the personality, mental energy. Integrating the lower fields. We will sound the Om after each level of the personality. We imagine the white golden light illuminating first the mental body. We sound the Om as we seeing the light illuminating the mental body. Purifying the astral body with the golden, white golden light, sounding the Om. Strengthening the etheric body with a white golden light and sounding the Om. And we visualize the threefold personality as being unified now with the white light. Now, personality soul fusion. See the lower triangle. Representing the personality with the mental body at the apex and the physical and astral bodies at the base of the triangle. The apex of the triangle is pointing upwards. Above the lower triangle, see the brightly lit higher triangle representing the soul with its apex pointing downwards. And by an act of the will, see these two triangles merging together and forming a six-pointed star. See the six-pointed star as a shining sun, representing the soul-infused personality. And sound the silent Om to confirm this fusion. Group alignment. Visualize a sphere of pure white light and the group members as miniature shining suns inside and around the sphere. See a sphere of light linking the heart centers of all the group members. A sphere of light linking the head centers. And a sphere of light linking the Ajna centers of all the group members. Imagine the light rapidly circulating through these three spheres and aligning the three group centers, Ajna, heart, head, into one mind, one soul, and one will. To confirm the group alignment, we sound the Om as a group. Thank you, everybody. Now, as the focus of this webinar is the path of initiation in relation to the second initiation, which was in front of this disciple, we start with that part of the instruction, the section of that instruction, where DK is telling her about the path of initiation and the possibility for her to enter it. And on the screen, you see that part of the instruction where DK says, your problem is not this or that circumstance in your life. It is not concerned with the activity of this or that person. It is not tied up with your family life, your financial circumstances, or your health. These are but the staging around which you struggle for liberation. These are but the opportunities offered by your soul and which, when rightly used, will set you upon the path of initiation. Yes, that is what I said, my brother. Upon the path of initiation. And not upon the path of discipleship. You are already upon the latter path. You know well within yourself that if you could achieve detachment and if you could arrive at a stable, focused mind, that the whole of life would simplify for you. Initiation is simplification. Now this part of the text is found in Dina 1, page 509. We can see that the way DK is worded this information to her indicate that she was really surprised because she didn't think she was ready for that, what he was actually telling her, that she was prepared. And DK knew this, but wanted to also encourage her and to give her a real incentive to work upon the required qualities. Okay? Now, if we would read this passage out of context, without all the background information and detailed study of all the 13 instructions given to this disciple, we would probably think that he is talking about the third initiation. Because that's what we usually think when the path of initiation is mentioned. And even having gone through all that process of, you know, studying the instruction and all the background information we have about this disciple, each of us would formulate our own understanding of this disciple. And that is really not surprising, is it? It's only to be expected because each of us would interpret it from our own level of consciousness. So you see, there is no right or wrong about it here. The only thing which I would sort of would be good that you to have an open mind to consider all the different opinions of other people. And as I have been emphasizing through these webinars, myself, that I am sharing my own understanding of this disciple. Okay? Now, the first thing to consider is what we know, how much we understand the path of initiation itself. Because, you see, we haven't been given much information about it. In any greater details, and what we have been given, you know, it's sometimes not very clear, and sometimes only DK hinting of it, but he's not specifying, you know, anything further about the path of initiation. The one thing which which is clearly emphasized is that we enter the path of initiation, technically speaking, at the third initiation. But you see, DK mentions path of initiation even with the first and particularly with the second initiation. And I have one interesting reference in relation to the first initiation, which BL, if you scroll a little bit down on the instruction,
More.
Here we are. Yes, that's it. Here is a reference from Cosmic Fire, page 446, okay, which says that during his cycle, he's talking about the Lord of the Seventh Ray, of close on 2,500 years, a specific number of men will pass on the path of initiation and take at least the first initiation, thus transferring their centers of consciousness out of the purely human into the early stages of the spiritual, means kingdom. And you know, we enter the spiritual kingdom or the fifth kingdom at the first initiation. So I thought this would be a good reference, particularly that first initiation is ruled by seventh ray. Okay? So, and why particularly with the second initiation, that the path of initiation is really dealing? Because you see, even though the true conscious expression, understanding, development, and utilization of the will starts technically at the third initiation, when we technically enter the path of initiation. But the first conscious expression of the will, not in its full power, and not, you know, in the regular conscious expression, happens at the second initiation. And it is this first conscious expression of the will which enables the second degree initiate to put firmly his feet upon the path of initiation and start to, from that point, really, to work with the will in some expression. Okay? That's why at that degree, second initiation, we are making a link to the ashram of the Chohan. Okay? Now, as we know, everything is a process. And each of the main divisions of the very big long path of probation, discipleship, and initiation, each of these divisions has its subdivisions or stages. And these are the very important ones, but very difficult to recognize. You see? And we must keep in mind another point, that Atma or spiritual will and Buddhi or intuition are anchored already at the first initiation. And from there, the process of their development commences, even though at first very unconsciously, okay? The same as when we're building the Antakarana, which is built in the first stages very unconsciously. Now, the key word for the second initiation is dispassion. Each initiation has a number of keywords, but this is a primarily a focal keyword, which was one of CDP's key notes in her development formula under the D. CDP, D, dispassion. Because dispassion deals with passion, desire, and emotions, which is the focal point of second initiation. Okay? She cared for those she loved as personalities, you see. and care is based on the personality care here, you see, because she cared for them as personalities and indicates a lack of dispassion or detachment, we can say. Okay? And so the personal care represents a hindrance, obstacle. And through the development of dispassion, we're shifting the energy from the personality care to the soul care. Because that was her major issue, that to love those around her as souls, not as personalities. And DK even says that all disciples should lay special emphasis on the value of dispassion and strive to develop it. Because it's, you know, second initiation is the most difficult for us to take, because it deals with the powerful energies of the astral emotional nature. And through dispassion, the astral nature is made immune from the appeal of the sensual nature of the personality, and desire fails to deter the soul from its rightful task, and thus enable the disciple to take the second initiation. Now, the astral body is also called the kama manasik, or desire mind body, and also the second degree initiate is called kama manasik initiate, where, you know, kama manas, desire mind, where the mind is influenced by the emotion, by the desire. This is telling us, you see, that we find kama manas at quite a high stage in our development. And it represents one of the tests of the second initiation. And we know that kama manas is found on the fifth subplane of the astral plane. And it produces glamour. And the problem of glamour is found when the mental illusion, which is the manas or lower concrete mind, is intensified by desire, the kama. And the result is illusion on the astral plane, which makes for us very difficult to recognize the real from the unreal. So we are under delusion there, of what we actually see there, okay? Because a glamour looks so real. The astral illusion deals with the second initiation. And the mental illusion deals with third initiation. This is a great difference here between the illusion of the astral plane and the mental plane, you see. From the astrological point of view, Mercury is important planet representing the principle of illusion. Okay? DK is telling this disciple that if she could arrive at a stable and focused mind, her whole life would simplify, indicating that this is for her one of the necessary requirements before taking the second initiation. He's telling her that her shifting mind is the result of glamour, and glamour is the result of emotional thinking or kama manas. He's not really specifying like this, because BL, would you scroll to the text what he's actually telling her? Down, not up.
Oh, down? This is what?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Down and down here, okay? Now, this is what he's telling her. Your mind, as a result of the glamour, may be ever restless and shifting. But the glamour is the result of potent emotional thinking and of a prolonged attentiveness to the circumstances of your physical plane life. The same attentiveness and potency directed away from your circumstances and to the things of the soul will free you. Okay? So the emotional thinking, he is hinting here at the kama manasic mind, a mind influenced by emotion. Okay? Now, BL, would you please put up the natal chart? Thank you. Now, the restless mind is indicated primarily by Mercury in Aries, which is the exoteric dispositor of Venus in Gemini. Do we understand what it means? It means that Mercury is the exoteric or personality ruler of the Gemini and is placed in Aries. Okay? Venus in Gemini indicates the shifting mind. So we see restless mind, Mercury Aries, and shifting mind, Venus in Gemini. From one thing to the other, you know how Gemini works. Very difficult to stabilize or focus the mind on one thing. And this, you see, was one of the requirements for this disciple before she takes that second initiation, which would simplify her life. Why he is telling her simplify her life? Because, you know, the concrete mind and the kama manasic mind only complicate our life. So she needs to stabilize by shifting these energies to a higher level. Okay? Now, Venus has its detriment in Aries, where is the Mercury, where it indicates lessening of the desire and of kama manas, an increase of the soul love or the sun of mind. And this brings very strong relationship between these two planets, Mercury and Venus. Okay, so even though they are not in a direct aspect astrologically, they are powerfully related through these relationships. Okay, and if we really want to know a person and the psychology of that person and how the mind works, it is good to carefully look at these two planets in the chart, Mercury and Venus, because they are going to open the door into the psychology of the person and how is the mind working. Okay? Now, both these planets here are related to Jupiter in Sagittarius. BL. Thank you. And Jupiter is a planet of excess, exaggeration, overdoing. And it is in a strong exoteric or personality placement in Sagittarius. Okay? So, indicating in relation to these two planets, Mercury and Venus, excess of the mental restlessness and diversification of the mind. We see that Venus is opposition Jupiter. From Gemini Sagittarius, and you see we are also dealing the intercepted signs here, okay? Gemini Sagittarius, which we discussed in a previous webinar. Now, how we establish now the relationship between these two planets and Jupiter? Venus is in direct opposition to Jupiter, but Mercury has its detriment in Sagittarius. And that is bringing that planet into the relation with the Jupiter. Okay? And Jupiter has its detriment in Gemini. So the most powerful aspect here is between that Venus and Jupiter, because there is also a direct aspect, but also that Jupiter has also that detriment there. We see here with the detriment lessening of lower energies and increase of the higher. Okay? So this triangle of Venus, Mercury, Jupiter indicate energies rising from the personality to soul focus. And you know, it is not surprising that these two planets, Venus in Gemini and Mercury in Aries, are placed in powerful esoteric or soul placement, because Mercury is the soul ruler of Aries, and Venus is the soul ruler of Gemini. But it is given to this disciple as a potential to work from that level. Okay? But that's why DK is telling her to stabilize and focus the mind. Raise it higher to the higher mental plane where we find the soul. And from the perspective of the levels of the mental energy, which we are here discussing, Aries represents the duality of the lower and higher mind through that Mercury, and Gemini from Kamamanas, one side, into the Sun of Mind, which is the soul. Okay? Now, BL, would you please put up now the quadra wheel? Thank you. Now, the overactive mind, as he is telling her this, is indicated also by progression, where we see the progressed Mars in opposition to the moon, progressed moon, okay? You see that? Which for her, the moon is, sorry?
Progressed Mars in opposition to the progressed moon?
Yes. Are we on the right page there?
Did you say, oh, no.
Yes.
My typing skills are not all that great, apparently. Sorry. 1935. Let's try that year.
Thank you.
Okay. Progress to moon, 3 Capricorn.
Could you put it for July 10, 1935, where these aspects are exact? Thank you.
Okay.
We see them all in 8 degrees, right?
Here's Mars progressed, and here's
8 degree in Cancer to 8 degree moon in Capricorn. And both making a square to the natal Mercury in Aries at 8 degree Aries. You see that T square there? And the moon, which is always veiling one of the three planets, and for this disciple it is the Neptune. You see, this is by the progression operating at the time when this instruction is being given for the year 1935. Okay? And indicating the very busy Mars Mercury, right, with that moon, changing mind, overactive. There is also important transit of Chiron in the 12th house PL going through Gemini. Okay. And this is a major planet of adjustment of something which is not working in balance. That's why the wound and the healer represented by Chiron. And through Gemini, it is going over the solar arc Mercury in Gemini. Obviously, you need to now bring it to maybe start with the March 1935, that people see, these aspects in more clarity. Because the transits, go back and forward. And there you see the Chiron at what degree is it? I can't see it from here.
It's at 5 degrees.
Right. So it is going over that solar arc Mercury in Gemini, but it is going also over the natal Venus in Gemini. Okay? So both of these planets, which we have already mentioned in relation to the mind, are under the influence of the Chiron adjusting healing energy process there. Okay? And the natal Venus Mercury are also influenced by the second Saturn return over natal and solar arc Mercury also, and also activating the natal T square Venus Mars conjunct opposition Jupiter and both square Saturn. Because the second Saturn return with the direct hits to the Saturn start from the March, and it's going until the end of 1935. Okay? Because the transiting Saturn is going to move forward, stop, and going back over that natal Saturn. And because the natal Saturn is at the 4 degree, we find, okay, the 4 degree Venus, and then it is moving further. It's going to hit the 8 degree Mercury and the progressed Saturn and the progressed Mars and the progressed Moon. all of this is going to be hit by that transiting Saturn. Very important controlling and disciplining energy, especially at the second Saturn return, which is primarily related to the second initiation. So, you see that DK never says anything without knowing himself astrology also, that in a particular instruction he is putting things together also astrologically, what is actually happening in heaven at the time when he is telling her about her unstable, shifting mind, okay? And the supporting energies which he has to utilize this process of shifting them to the higher levels, okay? So beside the emotional thinking represented by that Venus and a strong Cancer, you see, she has strong Cancer in her chart, ascendant Cancer. The moon is in as a ruler, it's in another emotional energy, Scorpio, with the Pisces decanet, and her midheaven is Cancer Pisces decanet. You see? And we do know Cancer, how very sensitive sign it is, and how people who have strong Cancer at particular stage prior to the second degree, where the emotional nature is stabilized, are taking everything personally. Okay? The glamour, he says, was the result, you know, of excessive Jupiter time Saturn, given to the environment, which is represented by Virgo, Virgo house, where we find that Jupiter there, okay, and her physical plane life, which astrologically, you know, there are many other energies, but we are focusing on a particular relationships here, and that is a Mars, which by progression we find it in Cancer, okay, through the first house, which is an Aries house. So you see the relationship Aries-Cancer energies here also, okay? And the moon, which is the ruler of Cancer, which the progress Mars is in opposition to, okay? And Cancer, in relation to the physical plane, it transmits the ray 3 and 7, you see, which materialize things on a physical plane. Now, Mars rules the sixth house. Sixth house is ruled by Scorpio. Okay? In its opposition to that Jupiter, ruler also of the sixth house of intercepted Sagittarius on that sixth house. Okay? And it's placed in the sixth house. And both Mars and Jupiter are square Saturn, which is both the signature of the time element and of the mental energy. Okay? And with that Jupiter, excessive time spent, you see, on this process where she was continuously talking about her problems to her friends. And if you remember in previous instruction when he's telling her it's time to stop talking. Now is the time to do things in a quiet place, to think, laugh. If you remember that, what he was telling her. And you see the sixth house here represents day-to-day practical matters of everyday life through which, you know, it's the routine energy of everyday practical matters of either work or whatever other activities. But we are now focusing on her mental processes, okay? So the transiting Saturn activates all these energies, also what we are mentioning here, okay? She is told that if she has given so much time and mental power away from her circumstances of that represented by that sixth house to the things of the soul, because Jupiter, you see, it's her second ray soul ruler. And it is also the esoteric ruler of the Aquarian nine house. VL, where we find that Saturn in the nine house, representing the higher mind, and also one-pointed, persistent focus upon that higher level of the mind. She will free herself then from the material form, okay? And that is particularly seen, this release and freedom. It's a planet Uranus, right? And the transiting Uranus is going from Aries moving to Taurus. Okay? And if you put it to the March 15, I don't know where you are at the moment with that quadra wheel there.
There you go.
Yes, the transit in Uranus activates the natal Mars-Saturn square, the natal, right? And progressed moon, which is in four Capricorn, or should be somewhere, as we move into the April, through this process of March to April, and also over the solar arc Saturn, which is at 1 degree Taurus. Okay? So that Uranian energy is activating these planets, which we have already been considering in relation to the mental energy, and indicating the release which that Uranian energy can bring. Okay? To shift the energies to the higher level of the mind. Now, the planet primarily connected to Kama Manas is Venus. And especially when it is under the influence or in aspect to Mars or Neptune, which carry the sixth ray, the ruler of the astral plane, astral body, glamour, solar plexus, and also a sixth ray is conditioning the second initiation. Okay. Now, I think it would not be necessary for you to shift back to the maybe it is seen also in this quadra wheel, that in her natal chart, we see that the Venus is conjuncting the Mars there, right? In the 12th house. Mars is the desire, emotional energy there on, you know, adding to that Venus now, which is representing the Kama Manas or desire mind. Mars and Neptune are found in Taurus, right? The planets which transmit the sixth ray. And Taurus is the sign where desire is developed, reoriented, and finally relinquished. In Taurus and in Scorpio, both energies are involved in this process of relinquishment. And we know how strong polarity she has. Strong Taurus and Moon in Scorpio. Okay? And this was her goal. It was part of her soul purpose. Neptune is her esoteric ruler of her Cancer ascendant. You see? And Mars is also ruler of Scorpio, exoteric and esoteric. Okay? So we see another relationship of energies here, but to the same energies of the desire, emotional nature in connection to the second initiation. And it's good to remember that she has already been working with that sixth ray force for the last three incarnations. This is her force. That's how important these matters are for this disciple, but how extremely difficult for her, you see, to transmute these energies. Now, Venus is the ruler of Taurus, right? And it's dispositing as an exoteric ruler of the Mars Neptune in Taurus. And it's also the exoteric and esoteric ruler of the 12th house, which is ruled by Taurus and by the Gemini intercepted in the 12th house. Okay? And relinquishment is related to Scorpio Pisces primarily. And these energies are indicated with the Saturn in Pisces, both natally and by progression. And the second Saturn return is happening in Pisces. Okay? And Saturn, as we already mentioned before, is squaring that Venus-Mars conjunction in the Piscean house, the 12th house. Okay? Neptune in Taurus is the dispositor of the Saturn in Pisces, because Neptune rules Pisces, is a special ruler there. And Neptune is making a sextile to that Saturn. And both Saturn and Neptune make aspect to the Cancer ascendant. Okay? Natally speaking now. Okay? So it is direct relation to the soul purpose here. The Moon, which is veiling Neptune for her, is in Pisces decanate of Scorpio in the fifth house. A Libra house. A Libra rules the fifth house, and the exoteric ruler is that Venus in Gemini. Okay? Now, the fifth house, in this case, which we are considering, indicates personal relationships, particularly to her children, with that moon there in a fifth house. Okay? The other aspect of the fifth house is all emotional desire tendencies of the solar plexus, astral permanent atom. It's a fifth house area. It's actually ruled by Leo, which is a Leo house, okay? And also the quality of the astral body, okay? As we know, each house deals with many things. But again, I am picking up those aspects of that fifth house, which are directly related to that what we are looking at here. Because each planet is also interpreted from number of different levels, okay? So she would have to relinquish her ties, emotional ties, to those she loved as personalities and learn to love them as souls. Her love for her children, moon in the fifth house. For her family, moon ruler of Cancer, energy, so powerful. Okay? Cancer decanate, Pisces midheaven, Cancer ascendant. You see, her vocation or profession was her family. She had no other profession. And, you know, we will arrive at one instruction where DK is telling her how it was blocking her progress, that she had no other interest, no work, no profession, only her family. Okay? Her friends, she loved Neptune in 11th house of friendships. Okay? All this was of great importance to her. But that clinging love was holding her in prison, 12th house, Piscean energy, okay, prison. Where, as we already seen, is that Venus also coming back to that planet, very important for this disciple, in relation to all the other planets which we mentioned. The transiting Chiron, we already discussed, okay? And the transiting Uranus, freedom released from desire of the Taurian energy through which it is entering from Aries to Taurus. An activation of that Venus-Jupiter-Saturn T-square and the natal and progressed Neptune in Taurus through the first half of 1935, okay? Now, if we look now at the transiting Pluto, and if you could bring it a little bit further where you have it, that it is right going by the transit over that solar arc Mars. Could you put it maybe by months and months forward, not backwards? More in front. There you are. This is what we want you to see, that Pluto is in line with the progress.
No, that's the sun.
Sorry?
That's the sun. Pluto, it wasn't Pluto.
It's the Pluto we're looking at.
I know.
In a second house. Yes.
Oh, Pluto in the second house? I thought you were going Pluto on Pluto.
No, I'm looking at the transiting Pluto over that solar arc Mars in Cancer.
Okay, so here we go.
and the Venus by progression in Cancer in the same degree. This is a very important alignment, you see, of that Pluto over Mars Venus, because it is reflecting the natal conjunction between Venus Mars in the 12th house, the natal, and that Pluto conjunction with Mars. So we have Venus Mars Pluto natally together there, and now by progression solar arc, major progression and transiting Pluto over that. You see that this is a very significant aspect. And it is happening in Pisces decanate of Cancer, where these planets, all three of them, are found, where Pluto is the esoteric ruler of Pisces. You see? And reflecting all that natal conjunctions there. And this alignment coming together, Cancer Scorpio, Scorpio ruled by Mars Pluto, together with Pisces, emphasizing the water element here in relation to her emotional thinking nature, astral body, astral plane. These are very powerful emotional energies coming together through that Pluto, Mars, and Venus. All in relation, we are looking at her mental processes here, her mind affected by the emotion and desires. Okay? Because the Pluto is clearing the process. It's helping her, that Pluto there. It's also a healing energy of that Pluto. Okay? It's cleansing the field of this, you know, emotional energies. Because after the second initiation, she can achieve freedom, represented by that Uranus, from the complexities of emotional and astral control. You see, naturally, the emotional moon in Scorpio is squaring Uranus. That is her dispassion, detachment aspect, difficult for her to master. And then her life becomes simplified when the emotional nature is brought under the soul control and desire is transmuted into love. Okay? The Kama Manasik or desire mind would be transmuted, as I hinted already before, to the Son of Mine through the process of transference of the solar plexus to the heart, which is a process related to the second initiation, represented by the Jupiter aspect to Neptune, particularly this process, okay? Because Jupiter is the heart and Neptune is the solar plexus. Okay? That's why the indication of this is the esoteric placement of that Venus in Gemini. Okay? With its strong secondary energy bringing the soul in control. Because Venus, Gemini transmit powerful secondary energy, and Venus on its higher levels is powerfully conditioned by the second ray. And you know she is a second ray soul. Okay? So you see why he is telling her what she has to do. The heaven is helping her here. But, you know, she has to bring her own discipline and work into this to utilize these opportunities presented by the heaven. Then the restless concrete mind, which we, you know, is that Mercury in Aries, which we already discussed, would be stabilized and focused upon the fourth mental subplane. Okay? And then become an active higher mind, representing now the Mercury solo esoteric placement in Aries in the 10th house, mental focus on the higher mental plane, where Aries rules the higher mental planes, the three higher mental subplanes, particularly, okay? Where the highest of them, we find the higher or abstract mind. We know that in these relationships are involved the planets which are also conditioning the second initiation, Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune. In the sign Taurus, the powerful sign of desire and its relinquishment, where it's the secret revealed at the of Taurus, of the Taurian energy of this process at the second initiation by this passion, brought about alignment and soul contact, creating a channel for the light of the soul. Okay? So this is another very powerful relationship in relation to the second initiation. Okay? Because the secret of Taurus, you see, we are not having time to discuss this, but it is related to the desire, to the light. Light which, reveals and through the illumined mind and the will destroy that glamour of the astral plane also, where the soul contact have to operate. Okay? Simplicity is connected with all the initiatory processes, which lead us to the spirit of Monad, and representing our essence. Okay? But the simplicity in relation to the second initiation is indication of soul control and freedom from glamour, which would simplify the life, and also for this disciple, her stability of the mind and raising her to a higher level of expression, which the potential placement, powerful of the Mercury Aries and Gemini, Venus in Gemini, are indication of. That is her goal, to express them on that level of the soul. Okay? She had no particular glamour, you see, but she had many glamours. As DK is telling her, you know, she was living in a sea of glamour. And one of the important tests of second initiation is also to rightly discriminate between the pairs of opposites upon the astral plane. And again, DK is telling her she lacked discrimination. And when we come to that instruction where he's actually telling her that, we would look more closely why she lacked discrimination. Okay? Now, this fourth instruction, 1935, you know, it's opened up by DK's assessment of her a past number of months progress by telling her that even though she has made some adjustments, okay, she has not yet won the battle. And so there could still be lapses into their own lines of thought. Okay. Some of them we already touched in previous webinars. But in here, we see that the progressed moon, which we already looked at, going through the seventh house now, we see there, right? BL, thank you. Actually, there are both moons going through that area. One is progress, the other one is solar arc moon. Okay? Both in Capricorn. But the progress moon started, you see, from the beginning of 1935 was in a sixth house. Okay? Now he, by I don't know what you have, August there already, it has moved into the seventh house. Okay? Because the adjustment process, which, you know, she was going through, is the area of the sixth house, which we already looked in. Okay? Now the moon moved to the seventh house, and Capricorn, you see, rule her seventh house cusp, which are the other people, and the relationship of this disciple to other people, particularly those who were close to her. Okay? Again, this is the major area of adjustment. Bringing change in habits, moon, of everyday routine, sixth house, by application of discipline, Capricorn. Okay? The moon progressing through Capricorn, ruler of her ascendant. Because you see, it is only at this stage, the third stage of discipleship, accepted discipleship, where esoteric rulerships truly start to operate. So that moon operates also as an exoteric ruler of that ascendant, Cancer. Okay? Beside as an esoteric ruler of the fourth house, where we find the Virgo. So, I don't know why I use also the transiting moon, because, you know, it moves so fast, but I saw it as of significance, you know, going through Virgo Pisces, a polarity, which brings intuitive insights here.
What day are you working on?
Well, I didn't put the date, unfortunately, so, you know,
It would be forward just a little bit.
Yes. Well, I was putting basically that moon at the time, but it's not really important because the transiting moon, you know, move very fast. What I am trying to point out here, that there is adjustment in the old habits of thoughts. Okay? That's why also the transiting Chiron, which is the adjusting energy, particularly to the Virgo energy and the sixth house, is going through the 12th house. So we're dealing with the six 12th house polarities, okay? And the Gemini Sagittarius intercepted on that 6-12 house polarity, which we discussed in a previous webinar in relation to the retrograde planets. All this, what we are actually discussing, is related to these processes and have to be synthesized together in order to make the final judgments of things. You see? That's why we are only focusing on a particular issue, okay, in relation to the second initiation, upon the path of initiation, and what particularly were the issue of this disciple. It doesn't mean they are the same for everybody, okay? Only the fundamental principles are, but not the particular issues. For each of us would be different, okay? We see the progressed retrograde Mercury, which we dealt with in the 12th house, which we already dealt with, okay, is sextile the progressed Chiron, okay, which was actually exact 11 December 1934. I put it here. You don't need to. We already talked about that progressed retrograde Mercury, but it's significant also in the adjustment of the mind, you see, which we are dealing with. Where at the same time, you know, the ascendant by solar arc, you see there, in 1 degree Virgo, solar arc. There
sorry,
you are.
Sorry.
Okay. It's in exact square to the natal retrograde Jupiter in 1 degree Sagittarius, in the sixth house. So all these processes are related to the purpose of her soul, because every time ascendant is involved, you know, it is changing the direction of the soul processes also. Okay? In January 4, 1935, BL, bring that. I think we already looked at this. I am just emphasizing some points here where that Chiron, you know, is really going over that Mercury and Venus, you see, in that 12th house. I am adding all these relationship of the Mercury now with that Chiron, then the nodal axis, you see, of that progressed Mercury making exact T-square with the natal nodal axis in 28 Virgo Pisces 57. Okay? And that is her relationship not only to the people, you know, she cared for, but also the relationship to the ashram, the relationship and contact with her soul, okay, where this mental energy, you know, has to be stabilized on the soul levels, okay. So that's why I'm bringing this up as a refreshment point, which we already discussed from other perspective in the last webinar, but now that Mercury, you see, it's important from the perspective of the restless mind. Okay? I didn't want to go into this, but there is one important midpoint which the nodal axes are carried, and that is a moon Uranus midpoint on the nodal axis, which falls at 29 Virgo 7, which is just few minutes away from the natal node axis of 28 Virgo 57, right? And this moon Uranus midpoint reflects the natal moon Uranus square, okay, which I already mentioned as important square. She had to work with these energies to find the freedom and detachment from the emotional energies, okay, and which is brought about through the relationship of that contact with that soul, through the nodal axis, where that Mercury has to work from the higher mental plane as the higher mind. Okay? So this is creating another triangle of energies, bringing Mercury, Moon, Uranus together. Okay, which is an additional triangular energies here to what we already discussed. And this giving her the opportunity, you see, to resist the line of least resistance, which is represented by the Virgo South Node in the fourth house, indicating now her family environment and circumstances. Okay? And move towards the next step ahead, represented by the North Node in the 10th house, indicating the mental control and stability and detachment from the family and personalities, moon in her environment. So we are adding now a new information to what we already discussed, okay? Sometimes, you know, we sort of speak, you know, line of least resistance. Do we really know what it is for us individually, you see? And how we arrive astrologically in its recognition. And what is in front of us immediately? So we have an example from this perspective of the test for the second initiation for this disciple. Okay? So now, this would be possible through the utilization, the energies of the esoteric rulers of the nodal axis, you see, representing the way forward towards the soul control and soul contact. And what are the soul rulers of the axis here? Virgo Pisces. It is the moon veiling Neptune for her, and Pluto, ruler of Pisces. Okay? It would be through these energies she would have to work towards the higher soul levels. Okay? And Neptune, you know, is the esoteric ruler here of Virgo, a Cancer decanate of Pisces, on the midheaven. Pluto is the esoteric ruler of Pisces. And Saturn, always comes Saturn, with the duty, responsibility, and discipline as the esoteric ruler of the Capricorn decanate of Virgo, where we find those node points, okay? And Saturn, Neptune, Pluto, you know, is a very challenging combination of energies. They're representing a difficult race alignment, 1-3-6 here. Pluto first ray, Saturn third ray, and Neptune sixth ray. And you know, Saturn with Neptune and Pluto, wow, in addition to the strong sixth ray force, which is conditioning her physical astral bodies, including the whole personality, you know, it's not easy to handle and shift, transmute. And we see the transiting Neptune through Virgo on the IC, right? BL?
Transiting Neptune through Virgo.
And there. In the IC.
Right.
Thank
okay.
you.
Sorry.
And as the Saturn will transit through Pisces, it will come to direct opposition to that Neptune. Back and forward, both of the planets are moving through the IC-MC polarity, okay? Reflecting, you see, the Saturn-Neptune-Pluto, another triangle of energies, okay? Because Neptune is the esoteric ruler there of that Virgo, okay? A very important planet, which is opening the door to the Buddha for this disciple. Okay? And the Saturn return in Pisces, you know, the transiting Saturn, it's we already look at the March, then it would be in October and December. So through 3 months, going back and forward, hitting that natal Saturn and the other energies involved which we looked at. And that Saturn-Neptune transit opposition approaching in 1936, okay, the following year. Now, I don't know if people would have still patience if I bring a few other points. Could you bring the instruction and scroll it a little bit down? This is not what I wanted. Could you go a little bit down? Well, maybe I put it a little bit.
Down more?
Yes, try a little bit down more. No, it has to be up. Go a little bit up. Go up from now. Because I like to see that people see actually what DK is saying. It start, the fight is not yet over. Okay? Because I didn't think we would have time for this. Above this, higher up. Not this higher, above this.
Above this?
Sorry. Yes.
Let me just.
And above this. Sorry
there.
About that. This is it. Thank you very much. Okay. That everybody could see what I want to bring as a final point here. When he says to her, in Dina 1, 509, when he says the fight is not yet over, but by May 1936, which is, you know, the important full moon he's mentioning here, you should have reached a point where the sense of inner freedom will be so strong that you will realize that the things which affect the personality and which come from the point of development and from the lack of control of the personalities with which you are associated, will fail to exert any real power over you. You will be fast attaining the attitude of the observer, of the one who looks on, knowing yourself to be the controlling soul. Okay? Obviously, we will look at this, what actually happened in that May 1936, in the next webinar instruction. Or I will see, maybe not in the next, because we need to deal still with some other point. Okay. But what is happening already here, because you see, everything is a process. That's why certain aspects are carrying to the 1936. Okay. We note that the Saturn Neptune, which I already mentioned, if you can bring the chart back.
Her chart or the quad?
Quad.
Okay, and when?
Well, just keep it in the middle of 1935. Which is what you put it on? June? Put it on June. Thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted to add what I started to talk about, that difficult energies of that Saturn, Neptune, Pluto, that you see, the Saturn and Neptune rule also ascendant-descendant axis, Cancer Capricorn, right? Very important polarity. So the whole chart is actually being activated through the MCIC and ascendant-descendant axis with these energies, okay? And then the quick submerging of the old rhythm, represented by the Uranus, is still possible. Okay? Because the progressing moon is in aspect to the progressed and natal Uranus. Okay? But as he is telling her, these periods don't last very long. But her understanding is growing. The progressed moon is in aspect also to the natal and progressed ascendant. I want to go through this quickly because, I don't want to prolong this. Bringing this point, which people should really look into themselves in their own time on the recording. Because this is all important process, you see, and there is so much astrology information going through this, so people who are not versed in astrology might find this rather confusing here, okay? The last point, I'm going to skip this, and the last point I'm going to mention is that on June 30th, 1935, if you can bring that date on, June 30, 1935. Actually, if you want to see it exactly, it's the around the time 2:45 p.m. is a solar eclipse. Did you put also the time? Thank you, Bill. 2:45 p.m. that the people actually
I have a book.
see it. The solar eclipse is falling actually at the 8 degree Cancer. Okay. And you see where it's falling? On the progress Mars. Okay. Now, eclipses are very important, like the Saturn returns. And this is happening together with the Saturn return. And we already mentioned before another eclipse. And this is just another one. Very important because it's falling right on that Mars. Okay? The fight is on. Okay? Mars. Okay? And it is activating the triangle between the progressed Mars, 8 Cancer, progressed Saturn, 8 Pisces, natal Mercury, 8 Aries, together with the two very important midpoints carried by the natal Mercury, which are Moon Saturn in 8 degree Capricorn, and Jupiter Uranus in 8 degree Aries. So this is a powerful activation of all the energies which we already discussed, but now by the solar eclipse. Okay? It couldn't be more exact that where it is falling. Okay? And at the same time, the transiting Uranus is at 4 degree Taurus. And it's activating the natal trine between Saturn in 4 degree Pisces and ascendant in 4 Cancer, and conjunct the progressed Neptune in 4 degree Taurus. This is another activation of energies which we already touched on, bringing that releasing energy on that Taurian desire energies and releasing the light, the illumination of that Taurus. Okay? And the ascendant is directly involved here. You see, to find the exact alignments in degrees of such a nature as we are seeing them in this chart continuously, it's quite rare. So there is a deep, when he opens this instruction, he starts telling her, that about there is a deep discouragement by the cropping up of Hydra of resentment and suspicion, which is represented by Scorpio. You see? The progressed moon sextile, the natal moon in Scorpio. I don't want to hold the time here, but this is another important point here in relation to what DK says. I always recommend people to read the whole instructions for themselves prior to the webinar. Okay? But this time I try to extract only those passages which I wanted to focus upon. Okay? And as we've seen, what the primary focus of this webinar was to see what kind of qualities she had to develop, the energies to transmute in the processes involving the mind in relation to the desire emotional energies. Okay? Which, with the primary keyword of the dispassion here, conditioning the second initiation. Okay? So, without any further detail of this, I think I have at least tried to put across the fundamental processes here happening, okay, in relation to that second initiation. As she was approaching the second initiation, because once she takes that second initiation, you know, she can speed up her process enormously. She already spent, including this one, 4 incarnations on the same energies. And she was highly developed upon the inner levels. She had a problem with the lower levels. You see, but once she achieved that detachment, her major issue, this passion detachment, then, you know, she can move towards the third degree very fast. That is my opinion. And with that note, I am concluding this webinar. It has been quite a hurdle, which I'm sure for you also to follow all this. So thank you for your attention. If you have anything to say, I would really welcome it.
I don't see any questions or comments yet. Hold on just a second here. We just got some.
Really?
Malia says, so rich, Elena. Thank you. Okay, well, there aren't any other questions or comments. And so thank you very much, Elena.
Well, you know, it needs time to digest this. But I think it's very important, you know, a process involved here.
It is, and you bring that out for us. Leah also says, thank you so much, Elena. So,
thank you, Leah.
And thank you, all of our attendees. The next Disciple webinar is going to be on 12 November. So, good night, everybody.
Yes. Thank you very much, everybody. Bye-bye.